listening back to some of the interviews Granite Staters recorded when we brought the StoryCorps mobile booth to Berlin. If you've never been inside the mobile recording booth, imagine this. A small Airstream trailer with some sound paneling on the walls. There's a Formica table, the kind you might find in an old diner, mounted to the back wall, with two cushioned bench seats on either side of the table, and two microphones hanging off the wall over the table. When you make an appointment, you get 40 minutes at the table and walk away with a CD of your conversation. Now, you might be thinking, what on earth could I possibly talk about for 40 minutes? But every one of us has an extraordinary story to tell. Though some stories may be more self-evident than others, we each have a unique set of experiences that only we can tell. For some folk who come to the mobile booth, it takes most of the 40-minute session before they uncover that story. But Gorham's Bill Hatch showed up one day.
Hi, my name's Bill Hatch. I'm from the beautiful town of Gorham, New Hampshire.
And from the moment he sat down, it was clear he had a remarkable story to tell. One of commitment. And one that spanned several decades. See, Bill's from a big family. One of six kids, including a set of identical twins, his older brothers Ray and Dick. They'd never considered themselves an exceptional family.
We were always, and still are, a close-knit unit. And other than the normal sibling hassles that you have in a normal, dysfunctional household of the 50s, we were very close growing up. Because of the age proximity, we shared friends. And we often hung together with those same friends. We're close.
And things didn't change all that much when they grew up. The siblings stayed close. In 1969, Bill graduated from college and, following the footsteps of his older brothers, enlisted in the Air Force. All three of them spent time in Vietnam.
Dick was never very good about checking with the home base, so to speak. He was one of those where my mom, God love her, had to call his commander just to make sure he was still alive, because he had a propensity of not contacting us. So that's Dick. He was never very good about calling home.
And that didn't change when he came home. Dick finished up his tour of duty and was honorably discharged in 1970, and he moved to New York City to pursue a career in journalism.
Dick got back, and he studied journalism in school, and that was his interest, and that was his passion. And so when he got back, he started his life, civilian life, and he found a job in New York City that was related to journalism. Very excited about that. He started continuing his education, which was great. His passion was sports, and he had worked for newspapers in the past, and he was, I think, a very good sports journalist, and that was what he was pursuing.
So everything seemed to be going well for Dick. His parents continued to call him every once in a while to make sure he was still alive, and it seemed he was getting on with civilian life. Until?
I guess, and I'm not familiar with all the details, but I guess a period of a month or a month and a half or 2 months went by, and my parents were unable to get a hold of Dick, and became very concerned. So it was a couple-hour drive. So one Sunday, they got together, and they, I guess, went to New York City looking for him. They went to where his apartment was, and Dick wasn't there. They went to the landlord, and he was looking for him as well, because the rent was due, and he hadn't seen Dick in a while. They couldn't find him, and that was concerning. And I guess my parents took some steps, contacted authorities to no avail, place of employment. He'd left, and nobody knew what was going on. He left school. He just dropped off the face of the earth. I mean, you know, Dick, like I said, wasn't always good about letting everybody know what was going on, but this was really peculiar, even for him.
Now, this was 38 years ago, and Bill can't quite remember all of the details or the exact chronology of events, but eventually Dick is declared a missing person. And his parents did the things you do. They called the police, the Red Cross, the FBI. They looked through the city's death notices and even visited morgues and looked at unidentified corpses. But ultimately, they went home with no news of Dick. And time passed.
Like I said, our close-knit family with minimal conflict amongst the family members. We would always meet three or four times a year at the homestead. And we always met for holidays. Again, we would talk about Dick. Has anybody heard from Dick? That was always a matter of conversation when I would speak amongst with my parents or with siblings. Has anybody heard from Dick? Sister Joanne, who he was probably the closest with, she hadn't heard anything from Dick, and nobody had. Now we're moving forward to the next year, and like at Christmas, my mom would always have the present for Dick. I just can't imagine how hard this was on my parents. This went on for 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, that the gift would be there, the conversation, the unyielding hope that he would call someday.
Periodically, Bill's parents would resume the search. They'd hire a private investigator to revisit the same leads, hoping each time for a different result.
I think after a period of maybe 7 or 8 years, I mean, I think I kind of thought that he had died. You know, I just, New York City is a big, tough place, and big boys play there. And Dick, as he was, is stubborn. He wouldn't back down from anything, nor would he allow anybody to direct him in a manner that he didn't want to be directed. And maybe he got in trouble. Maybe he got into drugs while he was in the service. I don't know, but something. I just thought that he had passed. It was painful. I mean, it's hard to define, at least for me, having a missing person that you love and there's a sibling and part of your family, part of your life, all of a sudden missing with no idea of where or what happened. I mean, just the strain that puts on you. And, of course, I know my mom shed many tears and was concerned, and my dad, he's a very quiet individual and not one to show much emotion or express it, but I know it was really very painful for them.
This routine goes on for years. At every family gathering throughout the year, has anyone heard from Dick? Every Christmas, Bill's mother would buy and wrap a present for him. Every few years, they'd hire a PI who'd turn up nothing. And then, in 1996, nearly 25 years after Bill first disappears,
my parents got this mysterious bill in the mail, and it was from Queen City Hospital.
Apparently, Dick had been treated for some intestinal problems and was discharged, but not before running up a bill.
You know, it was kind of exciting news. I mean, just amazing news. And my first response, as I said, it was simple. We'll go to New York and find him. You know, there's only 8 million people there. That can't be too of a daunting task. But we got together and we talked about strategy, and it was a combined effort of the siblings primarily. We pulled our resources. One of my siblings has a child that's involved in the medical area, so she obtained some information that helped us. Another sister that's a social worker. I'm very involved with some social organizations, so I had some knowledge of maybe how I could gather some information. And so we pulled our resources and the information we had, and Ray and I were having a discussion on the phone. And I said, Ray, you know, again, would you go down with me on the weekends and look for Dick?
And remember, Ray is Bill's older brother and Dick's identical twin, which should be a benefit for them. It's a way to prove familial connection. But after 20-plus years on the streets of New York, what did Dick really look like these days? Bill and Ray didn't know, but they began making regular trips to New York.
We really didn't have any idea what to do. But what we started with is we figured Dick maybe had some drug trouble and maybe was drinking a lot. So we started going to detox centers, which was to no avail because they can't allow you to, they can't disclose who's there or not. But we kind of hang out outside and watch to see who came and went to see if Dick would show up. We trudged to the Bowery, literally looking under cardboard boxes that were homes, and I never thought about it. We probably put ourselves at risk more than once because it wasn't the best parts of New York City that we were trudging through. And we would look for leads. I would go to like Veterans Hospital. He's a veteran. And again, I had trouble getting any information. And we went through these steps for, I don't know how long, some months. You know, we just get together weekends and go down and do the drill.
So this was the drill. Bill would leave work early on Friday, drive from Gorham to Saratoga, pick up Ray, and continue on to New York City. They'd go straight to the hotel and get an early start on Saturday morning. Then they'd be out all day, hunting down leads, many of them false, at health clinics, rehab centers, homeless shelters all over the five boroughs, sometimes searching homeless camps under bridges at odd hours of the night. Bill remembered a couple of times when they went searching for 24 hours straight. And they did this every weekend. But arguably, the most important part of the drill was the patter.
Well, I kind of lied. No, not kind of. I did lie. We would go to places that gave care. And we worked out this spiel that I would go to whomever was in charge and say, introduce myself, tell them who I was, and say that we're looking for our brother Dick, who's Ray's identical twin. So that's what he looks like. And our dad has cancer, and we just don't know how much time he has left. That was absolute truth. He did have cancer. He's in his 80s, so of course we don't know how much time he has left. So that was it. And we gave them the impression that death was imminent and things were very serious, which wasn't really true. But what that did is that opened up the information flow as much as they could.
And they knew this would be a tough slog because they're looking for medical records. These were never easy things to get a hold of, but in 1996, just before Bill and Ray began their search, they were even more closely guarded because of HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. They could never be sure, when walking away from a place, if Dick had never been there or if the staff was simply not at liberty to say.
That kind of effort is easy to give up on because, you know, in the back of your mind, you know this is for naught. I mean, you know, in reality is we have a very little chance of succeeding in finding Dick in New York City. But we had the resolve to do. I mean, I couldn't allow myself not to do that. I mean, I really couldn't. My wife was very supportive. God bless her. I mean, she's wonderful. And she was supportive of the effort, as were the other siblings. So, were it not for that, it probably would have been easy to just say, well, we tried, and I guess we'll have to hope that he contacts us.
As you can imagine, statistics on this are difficult to track. But the FBI estimates there are a little over 100,000 open missing person cases. And though efforts are now being made to consolidate missing person databases around the country and facilitate searches for individuals, in 1997, there weren't too many resources available to Bill and Ray. They simply did the drill, driving down to New York every weekend for months, chasing leads and shots in the dark. At one point, they were even told by a couple of nurses that Dick had died. But Bill and Ray persisted until...
I decided that I'm going back to a VA hospital and let's find the chaplain. If anybody will help you, it will be the chaplain. So again, we went back to the VA hospital. We went and saw the chaplain, just caught him before he was leaving. And again, I went through my spiel, our dad has cancer, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, it worked. He said, well, I can't give you any information because I don't know. But let me do this for you. I have a colleague who may be able to help you. And I'll try to get a hold of this individual and see if he can help you. I'll call you. Well, sure enough, about 9 o'clock that night, he calls us and he said, well, the gentleman I was speaking of may be able to help you. And who it is, it was a Father O'Hearn. And what he had was a homeless shelter for men down in the Bowery.
So the next morning, Bill and Ray went down to the Bowery and met Father O'Hearn, the most promising lead they'd had yet.
Then he disclosed to us that he did know Dick, and he had known him for around 18 or 19 years at the time, around 20 years. He said he had seen Dick about 3 weeks ago, and he tended to show up shortly after the first of every month because he was getting a little bit of disability from the Veterans Administration. So great news. He had us write down all our names and numbers of all the siblings. But he also warned us, now you need to understand, these individuals are here for a reason, and many of them don't want to be found. chances of him calling are not very good. But if he does call, he'll probably call a sister or a mother. They never call the guys. And all we can do is wait and hope for the best. Oh, maybe a week later, Dick called my sister, Joanne. He actually called her. Great news, great excitement. The siblings, the next day, we got together, all of us, and we drove down to this shelter. And there he was. And I cried when I saw him. I don't know if you remember the story that Midnight Cowboy that Dustin Hoffman was in and how he sort of dragged his leg and stuff. That was what Dick was like. This rugged, proud individual. He was just a mess. He didn't have any teeth. But there he was, and what great elation. And I think he was embarrassed, but we were all crying and hugging, and we decided to bring him home. I mean, we didn't have a thing planned. I mean, I wasn't thinking that we would ever find him, and we really didn't know what to do, and he was an absolute mess.
But Bill and his siblings soon found out that locating Dick and bringing him home brought another set of hurdles. And for a little while, the normal family dysfunction became a little more strained.
I was able to find a facility, rehabilitation facility up here to put Dick into and detox him. As each day, and it was difficult at first. I mean, he lived on the streets for 20 years, and he responded to society like a street person does. And we had some very tense moments. I mean, he lived with me for the first 6 months, and it was hard. It was hard. I have to admit, there was times I'm saying, why did I? I mean, you know, this is, come on, Dick. This is hard. I mean, he was just really messed up and aggressive at times. And problem was, he had post-traumatic stress syndrome. He had no ability to deal with society. He would go off into tantrums. And it was a long road.
Dick hung in there, as did his siblings who worked so hard to find him. He went to therapy, got a lot of help from his siblings and a lot of help from the VA, and slowly, he started getting better. Bill and Ray found Dick in a homeless shelter in February 1997, having spent nearly 25 years living on the streets of New York.
Today, he lives independently in an apartment near my parents, and he's enjoying life. I mean, I would say he's just really the Dick. Each year that goes by, he's getting closer to the Dick that I knew growing up with. He's incredibly intelligent, fun to be with, very, you know, loving and fun. You know, he's a jokester. I mean, that's the Dick we knew, and he's coming back. And that was a combination of efforts of the family and the VA administration's been helpful, and a matrix of things has made this happen. And today he even has a girlfriend, which is really a huge step forward, I think. So it's, I guess that's it. I mean, it just, we found him. He's alive. He's enjoying it. My parents, I think, are very thankful that they got their son back. And I'm thankful and glad that we found him and that he's back with us. I guess the lesson is don't give up.